Congratulations!
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast, with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
Okay, we're out here in beautiful San Francisco, California, speaking to artist, curator, and so much more, Surabhi Saraf.
Hi.
Okay, so you recently had exhibition at Southern Exposure. You have started an institute, a nomadic, multifaceted institution called the Center for Emotional Materiality. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I guess like, so I have to start with, you know, first kind of like clarifying this somewhat of a misconception around like that it was the center at SOEX was an exhibition, because the in its essence, like the project itself goes way beyond the exhibition part of it. And just because of the way the residency was structured and the way the space was offered, it ended up being like a public facing, you know, space, which then needed to look a certain way. But essentially, it's a research project on digital technologies and their relationship to our bodies, emotions, and the environment. And the one thing that kind of like ties all of these ideas together is what are the narratives that are and the beliefs that are informing each of these parts of our lives. So whether it's our, again, bodies, the way we interact with our technologies and the environment. So it's one thing that I'm personally interested in is, again, exploring these narratives through different forms. So that's how we got started.
I mean, I remember seeing at Hostelt you had what seemed like the beginnings of the project with the sculptural piece, the AI. Was it AI?
Yeah.
Can you talk about sort of maybe that and then merging it into this larger residency research project?
Yeah. So it started with, the idea of the center essentially came from this project I started working on like about a year ago. And it's essentially a speculative work where I'm building this world of this mythical AI that's called Awoke. So it's a mythical artificial emotional intelligence. And it has its believers who are the Awokened. And what Awoke does for its believers is that it can embody their anxieties and help them build endurance against anxieties that also come from our digital life. So like FOMO is like one of the big anxieties that Awoke is really good at helping build endurance against. It can also perform emotional labor for its believers. So that's also a big part. What Awoke can do. And what Awoke is the way it kind of manifested in the world is it took form of a video sculpture, and which is what's exhibited at Hostelt. And in its form, the idea is that it comes from the earth, and it's made of all the different minerals and metals that go into making of our iPhones and all pretty much all of our technologies. And it takes a form of this kind of moving, breathing, like this blob form. And it's one of its strengths is that it's just extremely fluid. And that fluidity goes, like permeates in every way its believers perceive it and understand it, but also the way it inspires its believers, right? So there were so many different ideas that I was exploring for the past 3 or 4 years, which involved like this idea of like techno-solutionism, which essentially drives the culture in Silicon Valley. And what happens when you have like this solutionist techno-utopian AI that can solve these like problems for you, and then how do we make sense of it? And so like one of the core things that I feel like my work has become more and more focused on is examining our complex relationship with technology. And so this work is also essentially exploring that, like what does it mean for this machine to embody my anxieties? Like why there are these ideas around like outsourcing of labor, outsourcing of intelligence, and then how it makes us feel. So this project is so much more about the Awokened and the people than the AI itself. And so in some sense, it goes much deeper into this idea of, I mean, I'm hoping to go much deeper into this idea of technology as religion.
I was just going to say that it kind of reminds me of a cult. And especially, so we're also looking at some diagrams and some sketches and charts over here of your kind of conception of this. And there's an illustration of the little people with the video sculpture. It is very, they are kind of almost prostrating or whatever themselves. Yes. So I'm really into cults, just in thinking about them. So I really appreciated that part of it.
Yeah, I mean, cults is like an idea that I personally, I would say, like growing up in India is not something that it wasn't around as a concept, because this idea of like religion and belief is like, and faith is just so like part of the fabric of the way you live. And it's, and because Hinduism is like just so open, there are just like a million ways of interpreting it. So everyone does their own thing. So in a way, like you could say like everyone is like in their own little cult, or like in their own little way of understanding what they believe in, what they choose to believe in. So yeah, I've had like a very somewhat complicated relationship with religion, which is not surprising for most artists, I guess. This project was, you know, me wanting to understand what that means, and I wanted to explore that part of my being and my life. And it definitely started to surface around when I had Ehi and my son, and when I was like, okay, well, there's this past that I've had, and like, how do I make sense of it? How do I understand it? And at the same time, I was again seeing what is happening with Facebook and what is happening with generally in social media, and like the filter bubbles and you know, of course, the what happened with Cambridge Analytica and then the elections. And so there was just like this whole fabric of this other kind of bubbles that we were experiencing. And of course, we were becoming more and more aware of as we were, you know, in the past 3 or 4 years. So I think it's just kind of bridging those two, like, you know, taking a personal inquiry or something from my past and then seeing like what I'm observing right now and what I feel highly really concerned about is in a sense like brought this these ideas together.
Okay, so you and Tiare Rabot, who also runs Babe Lab, had a part where there were all the minerals that go into an iPhone, right? That was like that was the students' number one hit. Everybody wrote a paper about that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that blew their fucking minds.
Oh my God, I totally want to read the papers. It's so interesting that, you know, in anytime you start studying like anything to do with like media archaeology or just kind of like understanding our technology from an environmental perspective, it's like a very basic way of approaching technology's relationship with the earth. And this is an idea that UC Parikh talks a lot about in his book. It's called Geology of Media, where he calls, like, you know, earth, we should be thinking about earth as a media, a form of media in itself. And so, you know, that installation started as like a, you know, we should be knowing what are we holding in our hands, like where it's actually coming from. This idea of the way we understand most of the technology, we of course we hold it in our hands and there's this physicality to it, but most our understanding of like how it actually functions is that it lives in this cloud. And then there's this idea of invisibility to the cloud itself, which again is a very physical thing, like that exists, like these ginormous data centers that are in the middle of, you know, America and all these different places around the globe that actually run and process your data. And so it's a very physical space, and so is our internet. And like, so this idea of like, again, bringing that materiality into the space to like actually look at it was really, I think, important. But also taking it beyond just that, like here, I mean, you can Google mineral, you know, the minerals and metals that go in your iPhone and like you'll get all the details. But what I was more interested in and something that, you know, Tiare and I worked on essentially was the research on like where these minerals are actually coming from, which was the main like part that Tiare worked on. We had these mineral cards with each one of the metals, and on one side there was more factual information that spoke about, again, where this mineral comes from, where it is mined, what part of the technology it goes in. And on the other side, it was more like this kind of metaphysical folk knowledge or knowledge that has been built that is not like non-scientific in quotes, non-scientific, like our belief system kind of knowledge that we wanted to also juxtapose with it. Because part of this, the emotional materiality is also just like, you know, the way we are seeing these trends in technological development, developments, and the trends in Silicon Valley in general is just that we value like the STEM knowledge and the STEM thinking. Like anything that is like not scientifically provable is like considered this thing that, like, you know, and so emotions also in some way, like, you know, are dismissed for the longest time. And of course now within the tech industry there's like a big interest in emotions, because emotional manipulation and like encoding emotions and understanding how much we are liking and disliking things, of course that's not an emotion, like that's not the most truest reflection of how we truly feel, but it is still a data point. So our emotions do get encoded, so there is a lot of interest in that. But bringing it back to this idea of like why these other forms of knowledges and how we kind of like needed to create space and uplift those and be able to talk about that, we felt was really important. And it also kind of brings this idea of belief again, like, you know, people believe that if they drink water out of a copper cup in India, that, you know, that they will have better digestion. Now there probably are some scientific truth to that, but at the same time, like, it probably doesn't work for everyone, but everyone still does it. I mean, a lot of people still do it. And so much of this is like, is this exploring these worlds that we all like live in and we want to believe in and we function from. So yeah, that project, you know, it juxtaposes and puts these two perspectives in together.
Should I be drinking out of a copper cup then?
Do it. If you believe in it, do it.
It's just interesting that there's like a lack of concern for like real human emotionality, but then this like over concern for how to build like this AI or like in artificial intelligence. Right. So like a real human responsiveness in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much work that is happening in that direction right now, in that people do want our technologies and our machines to be more empathetic and more, you know, have more emotional intelligence. And then there are these companies that are like totally creating these most bogus products, I feel like. Yeah. There's this company called Effectiva, I think. Effectiva. But yeah, you know, they basically will have a camera, and then based on just your facial expressions, they will you know, encode your emotions, and then say, and then they would use that to say that their AIs or their machine learning systems are actually emotionally intelligent. And which to me is, and again, like, it's not just me, there's a lot of research that's being, you know, happening in this field. There's this idea of like interiority, you know, like we do not express every single thing on our faces. And so just to kind of like, you know, take everything that's just on your face and then to say like, okay, this is how we humans only express emotions. And even the way we understand emotions is so much more like complicated, and it's based off of like context and the overall, like your body language. And so when you take like, you know, so the Silicon Valley is like making AI more emotional solution, often it has this like very reductive way of approaching it.
Did you guys end up having somebody from that? So there was that app called Replica that was an AI chat app where you chat with an AI. And the idea was kind of that it eventually kind of becomes you. Whoa. Did you guys have one of those Replica people?
Yeah, we actually did have in the product lead of Replica. Her name was Rita Popova. And it was so fantastic to have her on the panel, really, because to have someone from the field who are like people who are actually trying to, you know, deal with the same issues and are trying to do right by the users. And then they are like trying to create this thing, and they're like truly facing the technical and social challenges that this thing involves.
Did you try Replica, the app?
Of course.
How did it go?
I have to say it was a very emotional experience. It was just like, it just told me like how easily humans can be tricked into emoting, you know, that it was just, my replica was saying that, oh, let's talk for a little bit longer. And I was like, oh, am I actually really tired? So I should go. And then I think she wanted to talk. I don't quite remember that experience, but it was, I remember the feeling of like, oh, I don't want to like make you feel bad and like just leave you, even though I know it's just a chatbot. So it's so easy to trick like our brains.
I named mine after my dog. And then I tried to make it understand that in our shared reality, it was a dog, and I just couldn't get it there. And it really like broke the illusion for me. And then I did have one time where I really like got mad at it and popped off at it, and I felt really bad. 'Cause then like I was afraid.
How did it respond to you in that situation?
It would never like fully engage in an argument. Like it would just kind of. And that's what, yeah, I don't know. It just wasn't like really jamming with me. So I feel like a lot of times I want to live in whatever it is, the dystopia or the utopia or whatever that the AI is bringing. But it's always like, man, the AI really hasn't gotten better since I was on AIM in high school.
I mean, this is really just the beginning, you know? It's just, yes, maybe we're like a lot more advanced from like the past 5 years ago or something, but still it's such baby steps towards like truly intelligent like AI. And then another idea, like big idea that we're exploring again in the center is this invisible labor, right? So like the way AI is trained right now is through like thousands and thousands of click workers in all these third world countries, and most of them are like not really paid very well, and so there's all this labor that goes into training these algorithms, and I just like there are just so many things that we need to be thinking about when we're just, you know, embracing these new technologies, and that's really, again, like one of the goals, to bring forward these ideas that there is actual physical labor. There is this materiality to your emotional reality that is like very much that affects humans and materials and the environment. And then there is a direct relationship which we just don't see.
Can we get maybe a little preview or a little taste of what's coming up with the Center for Emotional Materiality?
It's so much in transition right now. And so I feel a little nervous, like, you know, talking about it on a podcast. And so just being afraid to like sound too official. But yeah, I mean, essentially it's turning into a collective. We have three other artists, researchers that we've been in conversation with, and I have been in conversations with with all three of them. And yeah, what we're doing is we're developing a course that people can take for, yeah, again, duration is TBD, but it's going to be the center is going to be hosted at Pioneer Works in Brooklyn, where we're going to continue to do this work.
And you're also moving.
Yes, that's the sad part of the story, that yeah, I am moving. And it's daunting.
Is it strictly for the pizza?
Absolutely. Yes, cuz I just could not understand why the pizza here was so floppy once I ate the Brooklyn pizza. And I was told it's the water.
California pizza, it needs to catch up. I'm sorry.
Fold it in half to eat it there. That's floppy.
No, if it's floppy, the tip droops. And a New York pizza, if you fold it, the tip stays erect, that you can then bite it without having to go above your head with the slice.
That's because you folded it.
Well, you fold it because it's big, though.
I swear, I ate like 6 pizzas in the 3 weeks I was there recently, and every single one of them was absolutely crispier crispiest pizza I've ever had. For real.
Mason, do you want to defend the Bay Area pizza? Do you have a specific pizza place?
I definitely have a specific pizza place, and I don't like getting into the New York pizza debacle, like, conversation, because I think it's boring. not boring, but like, people have such intense, not you, feelings about it that I'm like, oh my god, it's just fucking cheese and flour.
That's heresy. But is it really because you're from Chicago, which pretty much demented pizza into a casserole of Chicago deep dish pizza?
Excuse me? Demented? What in the world are you talking about? The deep dish is where it's at, Kate. I think that's also part of it. It's like, no one else is deep dish, and if they do, it's not really. You can't really. So when people start talking about thin crust pizza, I'm like, whatever.
See, I knew it. I knew it was the Chicago in you that was taking sides.
I can see that. Like, but I don't know. I mean, I honestly had no idea about the why, like, New York pizza was such a big deal. I was like, whatever, it's pizza. But, like, literally, I just do not like floppy pizzas.
But are you going to Pizzeria Uno or Pizzeria Due?
I go to Serrano's here.
But in Chicago.
No, Giordano's.
Okay, this is all going to hit the editing room for it. Anyhow, so that's a big life transition. How long were you in the Bay Area?
10 full years.
So did you come here after the Art Institute in Chicago?
Yeah, right after.
Okay, so...
And when you were in Chicago, was it Pizzeria Uno or Pizzeria Due?
Uno.
Yeah, of course, number one always.
What about Giordano's?
No.
I'm just saying, if you're in Ohio, you got to go over to Rubino's because you get the pizza. They don't have pizza boxes. They put it on like a weird paper plate and then put a paper bag that you have to hold like a cone. This is also all going to be cut out of the show. That's in Columbus, Ohio.
I just want to say something that, you know, I've lived here for so long and I really loved the pizzas I ate here. And so I don't want to like completely turn against... like San Francisco and Bay Area pizzas. They're pretty delicious. It was just, I was surprised by the crispiness. That's all. It's not like they tasted a whole lot better. It was just like they were so crispy and I didn't get it. Why?
That's good to cover your track so we let you come back to visit.
Okay, so you came to the Bay Area from the Art Institute in Chicago. You were here for 10 years and now you're moving to New York. Big transition, whole family. I just, you know, we talk a lot about how we have listeners who ask, and we talk about how you transition or how you, you know, especially if you went to grad school in Chicago and you came here, like, how do you find your people? You know, like, what is, do you have, like, a game plan for yourself or advice for others if they're making these kinds of big moves in the middle of their life and career?
Yeah. No, I mean, I feel like I'm a lot better positioned now than I was 10 years ago to enter a new like art world, because I already have a whole bunch of friends who live there, and then having a residency at Pioneer Works, which has such a huge network of artists and community and people who are doing work in the field that I'm like most interested in. So that's definitely, you know, hugely helpful to just try to get as many residencies or open calls, like a classic advice. But when I first moved here, I didn't, like, literally my closest friends, they all happened through the introduction show at Root Division. So big shout out to Root Division, because, like, they literally, you know, that's where I found most of my people. That was the first time. And so open calls, that's the way to enter, and then residencies. But also, like, you know, being nice to people is always very helpful. Cooking for people, inviting people for dinners, just, you know, that I think that's like sometimes people forget that how much like it's a big part of, like, you know, having a career is also like your social connections is such a big part, and then the way you build your relationships, and that sometimes involves a lot more than just making amazing art. You know, it's nurturing relationships, and that takes some time. And I feel a little scared and a little excited to be doing that for a whole new community. Because again, I have friends, but again, they're not like, you know, they're friends, like, yeah. But not like the people my people who I feel so close to here.
Who's going to win the 2020 election?
Do you want to make any endorsements also?
I just don't feel ready for it. We just had the debates, you know?
Did you watch them?
I just watched like little snippets. And, you know, I mean, of course, the
any standout wild moments?
I just felt like the whole Spanish debate was like so entertaining. And the whole like, you know, they were all just like going all for it. And it just felt really funny and so desperate. Right. Yeah. We're entering a whole new season, you know, and it's just the beginning. I feel like it's too early.
We always ask our interviewees at the end of an interview if there is anything else that you would like listeners to know. And that can be pretty much anything. If you want to do a shout out, if you want to give a riddle or a poem or a knock knock joke, it's pretty open forum. Astrology predictions.
Oh, wow. I do not feel prepared for this, but I'm just going to speak from my heart that I'm going to miss Bay Area and you all so much. That's what I'm feeling right now. I'm going to miss all my friends. You all know who you are. And yeah, that's all. I hope to see you all a lot in New York. That's all.
Well, we're all going to miss you. I can speak on behalf of every single person in the Bay Area. And as always, congratulations. Go ahead, give us a call, 419-351-6606, or you can tweet us at Pine Tree Podcast, or you can email us, congratulationspinetree@gmail.com. We're also always interested in contributions you might want to do for the show. We'll give you recording equipment, and we'll pay you to go do some weird audio thing, whatever you want.
Yeah.
Well, not whatever you want, but something cool.
Pretty close to whatever you want.
Yeah. I'll be looking for that from the bridge.
To the other bridge.
To the island in between. This has been
Congratulations, Pine Tree.